You're listening to the European Tour Race to Dubai show with Dan Roebuck and John Hawksworth.
Hello and welcome to the Race to Dubai show, and it's playoff joy for Italy's Andrea Pavan as he claims the BMW International Open.
Can't believe, where I was 2 years ago at this moment. I was really struggling, and I can't thank enough my coach, my caddy, my family, my wife. I mean, it's amazing.
Pavan overcame Englishman Matt Fitzpatrick on the second extra hole.
Disappointing, been playing well. Obviously, that's what's showed in coming here and getting into a playoff, which has been great. It's a good week overall, but just disappointed and not to top it off.
All the reactions are come from Germany, plus we'll look ahead to the next events on the European Tour, and we're off to Spain for the Estrella Damm NA Andalucía Masters, hosted by the Sergio Garcia Foundation. Hello, I'm Dan Roebuck, and I'm pleased to say that I'm joined by former European Tour player John Hawksworth. John, how are you?
Well, I'm absolutely tip-top, thanks.
Fantastic.
How about yourself?
I'm very well. I must admit, the last time that I saw you, John, you were in a private members' club bar. Well, I say bar, it was more the terrace. I was surprised to see you because it's the playground of the rich and famous, this particular very famous club. And I thought, how on earth has John Hawksworth gone there? But you seem to be enjoying yourself.
Well, I found a wallet on Tizzy High Street, so I thought I might as well use it.
I'm also pleased to say that golf journalist Michael McEwen is with us of Bunkered magazine. Amongst other things, Michael, how versed are you in the London private members club scene?
Yeah, it's not a scene I'm too familiar with. You can tell from my accent, I'm not from that neck of the woods, but look, if it's good enough for John, then it's good enough for me.
I'm just surprised that they let John in.
Well, I didn't realise that having a cappuccino with no chocolate on top was so serious.
Michael, tell us a little bit about what you do, Bunkered Magazine, amongst other things.
Yeah, so Bunkered Magazine, it's, I guess you could say, the home of golf's own golf title. We're produced up here in Scotland. We've been on the go since 1995, I think it is, so almost a quarter of a century in business. And yeah, it was formed because there was a niche in the market. Scotland's the home of golf, but it didn't have its own golf magazine. So my bosses spotted that niche, and here we are. You know, our magazine's still going strong. It's the biggest selling mag in Scotland, golf mag in Scotland. And lately, over the past 10 years or so, we've seen a bit of a digital transition, which has been quite exciting. So getting involved in online activity, social media platforms, so on and so forth, which is great.
Speaking of social media, some great stuff by the European Tour, incidentally, over the course of the last few days when it came to the BMW International Open. And first and foremost, we're going to take a look back at events in Germany. John Andrea Pavan claiming the title with a playoff win over Matt Fitzpatrick. He started the day 4 shots off the pace, but it always seemed to me a golf course that someone could come from off the pace to win. He managed to total 15 under with 2 birdies in the last 3 holes.
Yeah.
Matt stumbled a little bit, but that's not the whole story of the day because there was an awful lot of players in contention. I think the lead changed hands 4 or 5 times.
Well, yeah, it's a kind of golf because, I mean, it started back in 89. David Fiatu, who's a broadcaster in America now, won the inaugural event. Some great players are one of these. It's one of the flattest courses you could possibly play. And it is a golf course. If you get it going, it's matured over the years. You could score well on it. Keim was in contention, wasn't he, after 2 and then tossed in a 75 in round 3. But if you hit it out of position around the golf course, because it's matured a lot, the trees are growing, the rough's up a little bit. And it was weather interrupted this week, especially in the first round. Rained heavy again on Saturday night. They brought the times forward on Saturday day because they thought there's a storm coming in. But a lot of these players know this golf course well, so... Yeah, Schwab was in there, wasn't he? Pavan was in there. Westwood was in there. Jordan Smith, Matt Wallace, defending champion, although he didn't win it round here. He won it at Larchinhof, good Larchinhof. So it was always going to to and fro all day. The bogey that Fitzpatrick made at 17 and then birdied the last get in the playoff because Pavan had shot 66 by then and posted 15 under. I was surprised it wasn't lower that won it, actually, because normally it's up towards 20 and has been over 20 under par, but they've lengthened it in recent years, so... to accommodate, you know, how far these guys hit it now. But he's an impressive player, Pavan. I mean, he won in Czech as his first event. And he's just a crop of one of these Italians. Going back 25 years when the federations put money in, the French, the Swedish, the Italians, the Germans, you're really reaping the rewards of how they've brought the game on, and it's no surprise to me that he won. It was a great event. It always is.
Massive crowds as well. Michael, did Pavan look a likely winner to you ahead of the final day? I mean, he shot a fine around 66, six birdies, bogey-free, but there were, I don't know, bigger names in contention, I guess. I mean, Matt Fitzpatrick, I think, was the favourite going into the final day. Obviously, Jordan Smith led by one going into the final day. There were some bigger names lurking around, the likes of Matt Wallace, who we know is a multiple winner. How did you see the last day pan out? Did it pan out as you thought it might do?
Not at all. No, I wasn't expecting Pavan to win. He got off to a good start, I know, but look, you look at the leaderboard after 54 holes, and like you say, you know, Fitzpatrick, Cabrera Bale was kicking around there, Molinari, Kiros Bezuidenhout, but particularly Matt Wallace. I just felt as though the winner was going to come from somewhere in there. I actually probably expected Matt Wallace to see it through, and but for a bit of a disaster down 18, he possibly could have. You know, I think Matt had some like five birdies on his card, but offset against three pretty clumsy, pretty ugly bogeys to settle for a two under 70. So, yeah, I kind of expected to see him in there. But look, the depth of the quality in the European Tour these days is just so incredible that it's getting harder and harder to pick a winner from week to week. Like John says, you know, Pavan's a quality player, has been for some time, and he's grafted, climbed up through the ranks. I think he's a two-time Challenge Tour winner, Q School graduate. So, I mean, he's paid his dues, and that's two wins in a year now, so I'm delighted for him.
Yeah, and I guess, Michael, as well, you get these players coming on tour, and they are so good that they don't seem to have the fear that maybe sort of middle-ranking players might have had a decade ago.
Yeah, totally right. I mean, I spent a couple of days out in Munich last week. I was there on the practice days, and it was my first time at a European Tour, like a regular European Tour event for a few months. And, you know, I was struck by just how young everyone on the range looked. It's a very different setup to when I started covering golf back in 2004. All these young guys are so athletic. They're so powerful. They just look primed to turn up and win most weeks. I think Pavan's compatriot, Guido Migliozzi, is a great example of that. There's no fear factor, like you say. These guys are turning up on tour. They are ready to win. It's startling to see, but also quite encouraging.
John, Matt Fitzpatrick will be ruining the chance to get, or missing the chance to get another European Tour win, not just because of the bogey on 17, drivable par 16, three-putted that. He was big odds on favourite at that stage to win. And you think this is a guy who's won, was it, five times on tour. He will win this from here on in. He's the one that's going to be kicking himself more than any other, I would imagine.
Well, he opened up with 73 in the first round, which round that golf course, for a player of his calibre, is really shooting 78.
Is that a bit of a hangover coming from the US Open?
Well, it might have been. You know, he shot 73 and then on day two, he made seven birdies. Suddenly, he shoots 66 and then the next day he shoots 65 with a bogey and then suddenly he's 12 under par and right in touch. And he started off okay in the sense of he went out in one under, his first birdie came at nine, but that bogey at 17 and the three whack at 16 obviously was damaging. But to birdie the last two match Pavan and then I think, was it the first playoff hole, he plugged it just short of the water.
Just short. And if it wasn't raining as it was, it may well have gone in.
Well, there's no question it would have gone in. And he would, of course, he got a free drop there and got up and down for his par because Pavan had a putt actually to win it and they went back again. I mean, yeah, you can say he'd be kicking himself, but after opening up with the 73, to get in a playoff is some effort because that is a golf course where they normally score really well around it. So I think golfers don't do this. They don't slap themselves on the back. He should congratulate himself for getting the chance to win, to make his sixth event.
Well, yeah, when the dust settles, he'll be pleased with his performance, but he still missed out on the win. I always wonder, Michael, and I never know, and I don't know if Michael, yourself or John can tell me this, when golfers travel around the world, when you're covering events around the world, I mean, how much does it actually take out of you? If you look at the players who played in the US Open, what we're talking, Fitzpatrick here, Wallace, Cabrera Bay, I mean, they're all up on the leaderboard. I mean, it might have affected them, I don't know, a few percentage points. Michael, what do you think?
Yeah, totally agree. You know, Martin Kaymer was probably the one who suffered from the hangover at exactly the worst time. He was up there after 36 holes and, yeah, threw in, as John said, that 75 in round three, which was a bit strange. I think it's also, it's not just the actual travel and covering the time distances. It's also reconditioning yourself to a different experience. You know, these guys talk about peaking four times a year. They want to peak for the majors, and then, you know, they turn up at, say, Pebble Beach with all the history, everything at stake, what a win could mean for their careers, humongous crowds, huge prize money. And then, with the absolute greatest of respect to the BMW International Open, it's not in the same league in that sense. So, you know, it's a probably a little bit of a come down after the high of the previous week. Like I say, I mean that with absolutely the greatest of respect to the event, which is brilliantly staged, and, you know, the golf club's a fantastic facility. The course looks great. I mean, it's just not a major. So these guys, no doubt, probably have a little bit of mental fine-tuning to do when they go there.
You've also got to remember, they're not flying EasyJet going some awful cheese toasty out there that's been put in a microwave. They're turning left when they get on.
Sure,
they're lying down.
But it's still west coast of America to Central Europe-ish.
I know, but it's not, you know, these lads have been travelling for years. It's not that big a deal. And you just go to bed the time of the country that you're in at the normal time. It doesn't like, and they're fit as well. You know, they're not swinging eight to ten beers on the way over and feeling awful. These are athletes. Have you not heard of modern technology?
I just don't know. People always flag this up and they say, oh, well, West Coast America straight. You know, it's gonna affect players.
You'll be one of these people that go to the airport, won't you? And the bar opens at 4:30 in the morning,
John,
and you're on Tennant Super.
It's 5 o'clock somewhere, as they say. let's get a bit of social media reaction from the players. Andrea Pavan says, this feels amazing. Thank you at Ali Christian Molina and all of the people involved to get me here today holding this amazing trophy. I could not have done it without you. Matt Fitzpatrick says, well, that one hurt a little despite the loss in the playoff. It's still a good week. Really disappointed given my position on the 16th green, but that's the game. Only motivates me to work harder and get over the line. Congrats to Andrea Pavan. Great round on Sunday. And Matthias Schwab said, tied third at the BMW International Open with great support from the crowds, coming closer to where I want to be. Just a word on the crowds before we speak to Andrea Pavan on the Race to Dubai show. Record-breaking numbers, John. They were fantastic, weren't they, in Germany?
Well, it's not that far from Munich, and down in Bavaria there, they love the golf. It's also close to the Austrian border as well, so I would think quite a lot came across. I heard some stories of some people that had driven sort of 400Ks to come and watch Schwab in the final round. It's always very popular in that part of the world, and the German crowds are always great. I used to love A, playing it, and B, commentating there at it. It was just had a great buzz about it.
Is there an upswing, Michael, in continental Europe when it comes to crowds? I mean, we were in Denmark not so long ago, and they're always brilliant for that particular event. One or two don't get the crowds, or haven't over the years, but I get the general feeling that there is a bit of an upturn and there are more people coming through the turnstiles, if there are indeed turnstiles still exist these days. Is that right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it varies from event to event, and a lot of it has to do with the calibre of the players that are taking part. I think for the BMW International Open, the fans, as John rightly says, you know, it's close to Munich, it's a passionate sports city, but, you know, they had a lot of German home interest, you know, with Martin Keimer being there. I saw Marcel Siem signing autographs for ages and ages on the Pro-Am day. Yeah, look, it's got a lot to do with strength of field and, you know, as long as they've got someone that they can hang their hat on or to root for. I think Denmark, you've seen a correlation in the increase in Danish success on the tour, be it from Thomas Bjørn, Torbjørn Olesen, Lukas Bjerregaard, with the growth of Made in Denmark as a tournament. So I think they all kind of feed into the one thing, but certainly I don't think it's going to harm the European Tour's attendances, the more that the Ryder Cup takes place on continental Europe. I think Le Golf National did a great job last year. It's a great advert for golf on the continent. Hopefully Italy in a few years' time will be exactly the same. And look, we just want more golfers playing the game. We want more people to pick up the clubs and have a go and, you know, see why it's such a great game and discover why we all got hooked on it.
Well, the man who was wowing the crowds in Germany was, of course, Andrea Pavan, the latest winner on the European Tour. And I'm pleased to say he joins us on the Race to Dubai show. Andrea, huge congratulations. It was fantastic to watch a real battle. So many players in contention. How was it for you?
Yeah, I mean, it was great, obviously. Every time you win, it's a fantastic feeling. But, you know, I started a day 4 shots back, so I didn't have many expectations. I just wanted to have a good Sunday. And yeah, I mean, it started well. And then I just kept going. I kept pushing. And I didn't know what to expect as far as the leaders were playing behind me. So I thought if I could post a number and, you know, who knows.
Well, he certainly did play well because you birdied 1, 5, 6 and 9, so you made a massive move early on. Did you then think when he stood on the 10th tee, if I come back in sort of 3 under par, I'm going to win this outright?
Yes, I mean, to be honest, yeah. I felt like I was in there. I saw that the guys playing behind me, they were not going very deep. I saw that some guys early were playing well, so I knew that the scores were out there. And, yeah, I mean, 10 is a tricky hole, and then you've got a couple of par fives, some strong holes on the back nine, but lots of chances. So, but, you know, I didn't try to get ahead of myself. I knew I just needed to stay focused, and I didn't, I missed a couple of makeable putts, you know, on 11 and 14, I think. But, yeah, it was nice to finish with 2 birdies in the last 3.
When you got to 15 under, you're in the clubhouse. Did you then go and sit by a television screen and watch what was going on? Could you see what was happening with Matt Fitzpatrick and one or two of the others?
Yeah, we were just, I was signing my scorecard, and, yeah, I think they were on the 16th green, and I saw that Matt had drove the green on 16, so I thought, you know, he was going to get a birdie there and maybe go to 16 under. So I thought my chances weren't very, very high. But then I saw that he missed a short putt, and so all of a sudden I thought, I'll just watch and see what happens. And then as they were playing 18, I went to the range and, you know, hit a few balls before the playoff.
I've got Michael McCoon with me on Skype as well today for the Race to Dubai show. Michael, anything to ask our latest winner on tour?
Yeah, sure. Andrea, congratulations. Fantastic win. It seems like Italian golfers are on a bit of a roll at the moment. You obviously had Francesco's exploits last year. Guido Migliozzi's won a couple of times since he's come up. What's going on? What are you guys all feeding off one another's success? What's the explanation for it?
Thanks, Michael. I don't know, to be honest. I mean, Francesco's always been a very good player for a long time, and, you know, we always admire him. And he's played a lot on the PGA Tour this year, and he's done very well. So we look forward to seeing him back in Europe soon. But as far as, yeah, like the young guys coming through, Guido was a very good amateur player. He was he's similar age as Renato Paratore, and, yeah, I think he just took a little longer to get out here. But, yeah, he's a very confident player, and it's hard to say because golf, it's not very big at the moment in Italy. Trying to get bigger with hosting the Ryder Cup, and hopefully these victories and will help attract some attention to young kids and make them want to play and pick up the game.
Do you think the Ryder Cup's an inspiration for you guys? I mean, I know it's a few years away yet, but presumably, you know, yourself, Guido, the Molinari brothers, Renato, you want to be playing on that team in front of a home crowd.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think you would take any Ryder Cup team, but yes, definitely. At the moment, for me, it's very far in my goal list. But, you know, in golf, you never know. You just start playing well and things can roll. And all of a sudden, you start climbing the rankings. So, but at the moment, yes, I mean, as I said, it's just it would be more like a dream. Hopefully before that, I could make it into the Olympic team. That would be a nice goal.
It's certainly a goal for many golfers. There's no doubt about that. Just finally, just talk us through the playoff. We haven't talked about that yet. In terms of the way that you played the 18th and par 5, were you always going to play it the way you did it? We saw Matt Fitzpatrick get a little bit lucky on the first playoff hole. And because of his stature in the game, and he's won multiple times on the tour, he was probably the favourite, we've got to admit that, to win that playoff. But I thought you played it conservatively, very coherently, and you knew exactly what you wanted to do. And it obviously worked out well for you.
Yes, I mean, I think that the first day I hit a good drive and I was under the lip of the second bunker. I was struggling a little bit to draw the ball with the driver. And it's not really a shot that I like to hit a cut in, and especially because it brings both bunkers into play for me. So I thought in regulation, I hit a pretty good 3-wood and then another 3-wood onto the green. So I thought that's kind of the play. And unfortunately, I didn't hit the best 3-wood both times off the tee. So that left me with just an option to lay up. But I knew I could still make a 4 with a wedge, and it rained a lot right before the playoffs, so it made things a little bit more difficult. The grass got wet, and on the green it was just a little bit different. But yeah, I mean, after I lost in the playoffs at the U.S. Open a couple of weeks before the U.S. Open, so that was a bit tough. And I knew Matt, very, very strong player. He's won a bunch of times, so I knew it wasn't going to be easy. But I just didn't want to take a lot of risk off the tee and kind of put myself out of it.
Well, it certainly worked out for you. One final one before we let you go. Where do we see you next? Has your schedule changed at all over the course of the summer? What can we expect, do you think, between now and the end of the year?
No, I'm sticking to the schedule for now. I'm playing Valderrama next week and then the two Rolex series before the Open. I still haven't qualified for the Open Championship, so that would be a nice bonus in the next couple of weeks if I can keep the form and get into the event.
Well, hopefully you will get in the Open if you play like you did over the last 4 days. You certainly will. Congratulations once again. Thanks for joining us on the Race to Dubai show.
Well,
we'll
done.
Speak soon. Thanks, Andrea.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Great to hear from Andrea. Interesting, John, that he targets obviously the Open, but also the Olympics.
Well, okay, yeah, I mean, Justin Rose won the gold medal. Golf recently back into the Olympic Games. You'd want
but
to.
But is it a thing for golf, the Olympic? In my eyes, it's not yet, is it?
Of course
it
is.
Is it massive?
Of course it is, yeah, absolutely. You want to win a gold medal. I mean, the more there's no chance of you getting your hands on one.
Never.
Unless you break into a jeweller's. But, yeah, of course they want to represent their nation and try and win the gold medal.
I'm just playing devil's advocate here. Michael, is golf a thing in the Olympics at the moment? It's only going to be, this is going to be the second year it's in or back in.
Yeah, I think it's getting there. I think it certainly will. The same questions were asked about tennis a good few years back. And if you look at Roger Federer, the only thing that he has yet to win in the game is an Olympic gold medal. I think certainly in singles, he may have one for doubles or mixed doubles, I'm not sure. But, you know, that's the thing that keeps him coming back. There was talk of him retiring a few years ago and, you know, he decided to stay on. I'd be amazed if trying to get an Olympic medal wasn't part of it. And I think it helps when you look at the last Olympics, golf's return, first time in 100 years or whatever, and you look at the calibre of the medalists, I think that gives it prestige as well. You know, Rose, Stenson, Kuchar, and, you know, when the ladies came, I think Lydia Ko got the bronze medal, I'm sure it was Shan Chang Feng that NB Park were also up there as well. These are high-profile, high-calibre players. So long as those sorts of people have medals, people will aspire to get there. So, look, the majors are still the single biggest draw for golfers. That is the single biggest thing. That's what we will continue to define, you know, the greats of the game by. But, look, there's no reason why an Olympic medal can't be, you know, maybe not as big a deal, but certainly a big deal.
Dan was there the last time it was played for 100 years ago.
No,
he remembers it vividly.
I've got the tape of it, though, John.
In your tweed jacket.
Now then, Andrea Pavan obviously was smiling because he won the BMW International Open. There was disappointment for England's Matt Fitzpatrick, who was left thinking what might have been.
You know, it's just one of those things. I obviously got a look in the first bit of luck on the first playoff hole, but yeah, it's just been sort of the story of my season so far, really. Just the grand scheme of things, like just not holding enough putts. Missed obviously a chance on 16 there, three putting. Didn't hold a ball 12-4 on 17 in regulation. Yeah, just not holding enough putts this year so far. So disappointing. Been playing well. Obviously that's what's showed in coming here and getting into a playoff, which has been great. I mean, it's a good week overall, but yeah, just disappointed and not to top it off.
I guess it just goes to show, Michael, the regard in which we all hold Matt Fitzpatrick, because when he gets into these positions, we just expect him to win, I guess, these days.
Yeah, I think that's fair. You know, you look at Matt, and to look at him from a distance, you think, oh, there's a very young-looking guy, very diminutive, quite scrawny, I guess. But his game is, you know, up there with the absolute best in the business. I remember when Matt was an amateur, I spoke with him and his dad. And his dad said that he wanted him to go out to university so that he could get a degree behind him in case, as his dad put it, he proved to be nothing more than a flash in the pan. That was after he won the US Amateur. And, you know, look, he's a multiple winner now on the European Tour. He's a Ryder Cup player. I think we've not even scratched the surface with seeing the best of Matt. So flash in the pan, I think that myth has been well and truly dispelled. And is Matt a future major winner? Yeah, look, why not? You know, he's got absolutely everything. I think he's added a few yards as well. That was maybe the biggest issue with him when he first turned pro, is comparative lack of length off the tee. But he's picking that up. And if you look at the courses that he contends on, I guess you're kind of surprised. He's done well at Augusta National, for example. Yeah, look, classy player. held in rightly high regard, and hopefully lots more good things to come.
Second in Germany for Fitzpatrick. There were seven players tied in third, including Spain's Rafa Cabrera Bello, who was pleased to see an upturn in his form.
Well, I mean, I felt like the last couple of months since Arnold Palmer, I mean, I've been hitting the ball okay. Without playing great, I've been playing okay, just not enough. I mean, I've virtually made every cut, and then not being able to get the weekends I needed. So the game has only been, I mean, without being bad, it wasn't quite there. And I did feel it improved this week a bit. I felt my off the tee, I was pretty good, and I was happy with some iron shots. So I feel the swing is starting to look good again. So excited for the events coming up.
Quality player, John. Does he win often enough?
No, I don't think he
doesn't.
Does
he?
He bogeyed 11 and 12 in the final round after getting it going. He hit it in the water with his second shot. And 12 really is just a flick for these guys nowadays, probably no more than 9-9. So it was a bit of a crossbar for it. No, he doesn't win enough. To be honest, I think he's a bit fragile at times, getting across the line. He's very good when he's very good. Obviously, he's made a couple of mistakes, but you've got to remember Tiger Woods won most of his tournaments playing scruffy golf off the fairway. And then when he was good, he annihilated everyone. There's a lot of players can't win scruffily, and I think he's one of them.
Other talking points over the course of the event, chaps. Martin Kaymer, first of all. John, you can take this one because I watched a bit of Martin Kaymer. What was the event in America where he led going to the final round and threw that one away? Did he throw this one away as well? Is he turning into a bit of a bottle job?
75. I was there. Let's go back to Abu Dhabi when he led by 11, right? 11. Playing imperious golf. And then couldn't hit a barn door with a tennis racket from there on. And he hasn't won since the US Open 5 years ago. And when he came out, he won 10% of his first 100 events, Kaymer. I mean, he was ridiculous. There's something has changed with him. He's a little bit, for me, technically flawed and can hit it both ways. But, of course, he's a great, great player. I mean, you remember the putt he held in, was it 2012, at the Ryder Cup? He's been a great player, still is a great player, but he's not as lethal as he used to be.
Tried to change his swing, didn't he, to fit with Augusta?
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's a bit of a tilter at times. Left side, club going back, can get sort of across himself. Listen, he's a great player. I'm not here to sit and criticise him, but he's not as lethal as he used to be, for sure.
What about Lee Westwood, Michael? Again, he was up on the leaderboard over the course of the first few days, and he won in South Africa late last year. He seems to be enjoying his golf again.
Yeah, I think so. I think having his partner in the bag certainly helped. He says that he's playing with no great expectations, and he thinks that makes him more dangerous. You look at Lee now and he just looks a bit more chilled out. Even the way that he handled that incident with the spectator's phone going off, other players, younger players, a little bit more hot under the collar might have allowed it to really ruffle them and disturb them. But I thought Lee handled it pretty well. He just said, look, you know, okay, can you just turn it off, and got back into his process again. A bit of that's experience, obviously, but I think it also comes from him being in quite a happy place. He probably accepts that his best days are no doubt behind him. He's maybe even got one eye towards the seniors tour, I don't know. But yeah, he seems happier within himself, and I think that's translating in his results. There's absolutely no shame whatsoever in going 68, 69, 69, 70 around that course, particularly with the new greens. I think I'm right in saying all the greens have been relayed there. And from speaking to a few of the guys, they said that, you know, they were rock hard and such like. So yeah, it's good to see Lee's maybe rediscovered a bit of the passion for the game. Don't know if he lost it or not, but kind of seemed that way. And it's good to see him just smiling and enjoying himself again.
We saw Eduardo Molinari claim a top five finish. We talked about Italian golfers already on the show. Matt Wallace continues to contend seemingly every single event. He got a little bit ratty with his caddy, I think, at one stage or another over the course of the week. But this is a guy who I think expects a lot of himself now.
Well, yeah, he does expect a lot of himself, but you've got to be a little bit careful how you handle yourself as to whether it can affect you or not. Not everything is going to go right in golf. And a caddy, I don't know what it was over, it might have been a clubbing or something like that. You've got to just handle everything that's thrown at you. You can't expect to go out and play flawless golf. He had a chance, four at the last, he ties 15 under, he takes six. And of course he was defending champion. It's a learning curve. Some people are better at it than others. Sometimes he looks a little bit, if I would say, uptight and angry on the course.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree with what John said. You know, there's only so long, I think, that you can get away with saying that, you know, you're passionate and you're determined to win. There's 156 guys who are passionate and determined to win every week. I think you have to manage your maybe your expectations a little bit, which for someone who's had so much success in such a short period of time, that might be hard for Matt. You also have to manage your emotions. Again, another tennis analogy, but Andy Murray was particularly animated on court in the early part of his career and wasted a lot of energy, and probably it cost him certainly a few titles, maybe even a few Grand Slams. He started winning again and getting his slams when he found that sort of inner peace and learned not to waste energy and, you know, let the bad shots go. I think Matt needs to find a bit of an equilibrium, just chill out a little bit. Just do what he does best, because he's a phenomenal golfer. He's got all the shots. There's no question in his talent. But I don't think that this particular part of his character, part of his personality, is going to be to his betterment. I think it's actually going to hold him back.
And a mention for Gaganjeet Bhulla of India, who walked off with a new BMW after he registered a hole-in-one at the 17th. He hit the target in the second round and won a brand new BMW M8 Coupe worth, John, €194,000.
Yes, a little beauty. I saw one the other day, actually.
What do golfers do with cars that they win on hole-in-ones?
Well, I would think...
Do they actually drive them?
No. Rafael Jacquelin won a BMW Z4. He kept it because I passed him on the motorway in Switzerland.
What, the day after?
No, he kept it for about 6 or 7 years, a convertible. Yeah, some players, you know, they have a car at home. To take it all the way back to India.
But is that how it works? Michael, do you know how these things work?
To be honest, no, not a clue.
We were thinking potentially like a local dealer would sort out the car. Surely he doesn't, Michael, take it all the way back from...
No. Listen, some do and some don't. I don't know what Gaganjeet will do.
One final thing on the BMW event. Did you see all the players in lederhosen?
Yes.
Would you wear lederhosen? Well, have you worn lederhosen,
well,
John?
There's a little story here. I once went out with an Austrian girl.
Oh, yeah.
Who bought me a pair.
Really?
And I have to say, they never came out the bag.
Come on.
Oh, no.
No?
No. Not with my legs. I would look like Charles Hawtrey.
John, what's the strangest thing you've worn? At a weekend, maybe, when you're not working?
Strangest thing I've worn? Matching socks.
We need, Mr. Hawksworth, the top 10 from the BMW International Open.
Right, well, we know Andrea Pavan prevailed over Matthew Fitzpatrick, second playoff hole, to get his second victory. Then third tied, there were quite a few of them. Christian Bezuidenhout, Rafa Cabrera-Bello, Eduardo Molinari, Alvaro Quiroz, Matthias Schwab, Jordan Smith and Matt Wallace. And then 10th tied, Torbjørn Olesen, Matthew Pavan, the Frenchman, which you can get muddled up, Callum Shinkwin, a very talented man who's trying to get his playing rights back, and Lee Westwood.
Now, predictions from last week, a reminder of the format. All of the performers on the Race to Dubai show get two picks. One, though, has to be outside of the top 50 in the final 2018 Race to Dubai standings. 20 points for a winner, 10 for a top 5, 5 for a top 20, minus 5 for a miscut. Now, the trio of experts that were in the studio last week were Richard Kaufman, Jamie Spence and Matt Cooper. Richard went for Lee Westwood, tied 10th, and Victor Dubuisson, who missed the cut. Jamie went for Sergio Garcia and Guido Migliozzi, both missed the cut. And Matt went for Jos Luiten and Chris Paisley, who both missed the cut.
Well, it just shows, doesn't it, that they're useless.
So, Michael, this is your first time on the Race to Dubai show.
It is, yes.
So, therefore, you haven't really got much to live up to here, because our guests recently have been absolutely shocking. The latest scores, presenters on 170, that's me mainly because Rob's useless. Co-presenters are down to 80 and the guests are reduced to 15. So, Mikey, you've surely got to add to a rather... What day are we in? We're in June and they're only on 15.
Yeah, that's horrible. I'd like to think I won't do much worse, but we'll see. We'll see.
We'll see what happens. Fantasy Race 2 Dubai game. Stephen Swan and his team, Swan's 11, top the table with 16,495 points. Meanwhile, the weekly honours go to Joey Lally, who had a team that contained Andrea Pavan, Matt Fitzpatrick, Matt Wallace and Rafa Cabrera-Bello. If you want to get involved, you can do by heading to europeantour.com and registering your team. Top 10 in the Race to Dubai, Mr. Hawksworth.
So the top 10 in the race to Dubai are led by, at the moment, Matt Wallace, who strengthened his position with a good finish yesterday, then Kevin Kistner, Shane Lowry, Xander Schauffele, Louis Oosthuizen, Jorge Campillo, Justin Harding, Ian Poulter, Francesco Molinari, and Hao Tong Li.
Challenge Tour news. Erik Tagger Johansson. Have I got that one right, John?
It's not bad.
Go on, what should it
Erik be? Erik Tagger Johansson.
Really? OK. Erik Tagger Johansson claimed his maiden European Challenge Tour victory 18 years after making his debut by defeating Hugo Cosso. Got that one right, John?
Cracking score at Scrabble.
2-1 in the final of the Andalusia Costa del Sol match play 9. The Norwegian hit a stunning approach shot from 227 yards to 8 feet on the par 5 eighth hole at the Val Romano Golf before rolling in the eagle putt to win his first event on the circuit following a closely fought contest against the Frenchman Cosso. Spare a thought, though, for Clément Barrado of France, who was disqualified during the first round when he lost his final ball on the 16th. He was 10 over at the time.
Oh, dear.
So you run out of balls, you are DQ'd, John. That's the rules.
Well, I once played in the French Open, Paris Nationals, still on the 15th. I started at 10. The 5-iron into the green, yellow hazard, water. So my caddy says, you can walk forward 100 yards here because it's a yellow hazard point event. I said, no, it's not a difficult shot. Give me another ball, water. Another ball, water. Another ball, water.
So how many is that?
Don't hit the green, water. Anyway, I said, how many balls have we got left? 2.
Which hole was this again?
15. Okay. Water again. And the final ball I hit to about 70 feet and then hold it with the toe of my putter to make a 17. But I didn't hand my card and got straight back on the flight to come home. So I'd run out of balls.
Michael, how many balls have you lost during a round? What's the worst tally?
Oh, my goodness. Lots. You probably need an abacus or a calculator to work that one out. But am I right in saying that something similar happened to Tiger Woods in the 2000 US Open?
Indeed you are, yeah.
He was down to, I think, his last ball. He didn't realise at the time, so I'm sure there'd been a weather delay. He'd taken some balls up to his room to practice his putting. I think he'd given some away to some spectators as well, but had left the balls that he was using in his hotel room in the room. So when play resumed, I think he only had something like a couple of balls in his bag. One of them went in the water at 18. And Steve Williams, his caddy, was standing there, you know, fully aware that Tiger can't really afford to lose a ball here. Otherwise, it's game over. And he didn't, obviously, and went on to win by 15 shots. But, I mean, how different could history have been had Tiger run another one?
I mean, it's not quite the same. But years ago, Mark Rowe, we were somewhere, and I just ran a very thin bead of super glue over his zip and then zipped his bag up where his ball pocket was. And, of course, he didn't know. And then he came to try and get in his ball pocket and, well, he couldn't.
You're an absolute joke. Is that a true story, Mr.
Oh, Wilson? Absolutely, yeah. And we glued his head cover on as well on his driver.
How many balls are you allowed in your bag?
You can carry as many as you want.
What do golfers usually carry? How many?
Depends how good they are. I would think round about nowadays they would probably carry about 10 balls with them.
Stay Sure Tour news next. Jean-Francois Ramsey claimed his first win on English soil at the inaugural Farm Foods European Legends Links Championship hosted by Ian Woosdom after a scintillating final round at Travos Golf and Country Club.
Yeah, he was in contention the week before in Italy. Mm-hmm. Didn't get across the line. Travos is a lovely golf course. Mm-hmm. Ocean views everywhere. Harry Colt course, I believe. Lovely golf course.
Final round 67 for the Frenchman, who won 3 times on the European Tour, 5 under par score to take a one-shot victory ahead of England's Barry Lane. In the USA, Australia's Hannah Green won her first major as she took victory in the Women's PGA Championship at Hazeltine National. Green finished on 9 under, one shot ahead of defending champion Park Sung-hyun of South Korea. England's Mel Reid finished tied 3rd on 6 under. And staying in the States, Chez Reavie of the United States was another first-time winner, claiming the Travelers Championship by some 4 shots. England's Paul Casey, incidentally, finished in a tie for 5th position. Decent event out in the States. Let's see how that affects the world rankings. John's got the news for us.
Well, not massively. It is led by Brooks Koepka, from Dustin Johnson, then Northern Irishman Rory McIlroy, then an Englishman Justin Rose, now Tiger Woods up to number 5, Francesco Molinari 6, Justin Thomas 7, Bryson DeChambeau 8, Patrick Cantlay 9, and Xander Schauffele 10.
Onto this week's event on the European Tour, and it is the Estrella Damm NA Andalucía Masters, hosted by the Sergio Garcia Foundation. It is a bit of a mouthful in terms of the title, but, Michael, sure to be a great event, namely because of the course. It's always great to see Valderrama on the box.
Yeah, I love Valderrama. I was lucky enough to play it a few years ago.
What did you score? What did you score?
Oh, hundreds. It was three figures easily. It was so, so tough. But it's one of those courses that I'm desperate to play again because you really need to have, I think, quite an intimate knowledge of it. For example, parred the first. So walk onto the second tee feeling quite happy with life, very pleased with myself, and pipe a drive straight down the middle. And I'm going, yes, this is odds on to be one of the best rounds of my life. Not realising that if you pipe it straight down the middle on two at Valderrama, you're blocked out behind one of the biggest trees I've ever seen in my life. So obviously, you know, you need a bit of course knowledge. The only criticism is probably the last couple of holes. I think 18's a little bit weak, and 17 with the water feature in front, I think was put in for the Ryder Cup to create some late drama. It doesn't really feel like it fits. It's not very connected with the rest of the golf course. But that apart, look, it's, you know, one of the mainstays of the European Tour and has been a great servant down the years. Yeah, it's always nice to see it on telly.
Is it still tough to play, John, for these professionals?
No, I don't think so nowadays, no, because they can take lines and hit it in places that make the golf course a lot easier. It's real defence with the greens. If the greens are firm and lightning fast...
They're quite small.
Yeah, they are very small. The cork trees that Michael was on about there are a big hazard around the golf course. But no, I think they'll find a way around it. And of course, they're so talented now. It's not one of the longest golf courses in the world by any stretch of the imagination. It can get a bit breezy around there.
Sergio Garcia is a bit of a standing dish at that particular event. But he's not been playing particularly well, Michael, recently. Do we put him up again or do we overlook Sergio this time?
If he's going to do it anywhere, then you'd have to say he's probably going to do it at Valderrama. You know, like you say, of course, he's been very successful on somewhere that he clearly likes to be. I think, you know, familiarity helps him out a lot when he's there. But you know, look, Sergio's just the ultimate enigma. I find, you know, I get quite frustrated with him because if I'm being totally honest, I don't feel like he's got as much out of his career as he ought to have to this point, which I know seems remarkable for a guy that is now a major champion, has won multiple times, he's a Ryder Cup hero. But when you look, when Sergio first turned pro, I think everyone expected that he was going to be, you know, a great challenger to Tiger. I don't think, you know, history's shown us, and I guess hindsight's 2020, but I don't think anyone was necessarily going to challenge Tiger as it turned out. But Sergio just never, ever really hit the heights that I think he ought to have. You know, he had a weird slump last year and managed to turn it around when he got a bit of a confidence boost from Thomas Bjorn picking him for the Ryder Cup, quite unexpectedly, I have to say. He's almost the sort of guy that needs an arm put around him, and seemingly much too often. Yeah, he frustrates me. He really does. But if anywhere's going to pull him out of a slump, it's got to be Valderrama.
Always plays a Spanish event, John, every single year. Yeah. More often than not, he's desperate to do well in front of home galleries, isn't he, Sergio?
Of course he's desperate. I mean, he's got success around there. I don't think he's in the right place mentally at the moment. Maybe time will tell. It's a game of confidence, this. It could change in 5 minutes, but he could lose it quickly.
Michael, one player that never lacks in confidence is John Rahm. We saw him win the Spanish Open last year. I don't generally like it when PGA Tour players, I'm putting Rahm in that category, just come over and win and then just go back again. But he's got the tools to do that, hasn't he?
Yeah, John Rahm is a complete player. And, you know, I think it's always interesting when you think, when you talk about players who are going to be in contention, Ram's a name that's always up there, but he's only been pro for 3 years. I think people forget that. You know, that's a relatively short time, and for him to have won the events that he's won and to really establish himself as one of the game's top forces, I think is pretty impressive. Says a lot about his character and his attitude. Look, there have been question marks about his demeanour and his volatility as well, but I feel like Ram seems to harness that a little bit better than, say, Sergio or Matt Wallace. He uses, maybe a bit like Brooks Koepka, uses that chip on his shoulder and turns it into a positive as opposed to letting it weigh him down. He's won in front of home crowd, like you say. Would not be surprised to see him in amongst it again this week.
We've got Matt Fitzpatrick, Michael, playing again. Are you surprised to see him play again? He played US Open and obviously played last week in Germany. He's rocking up at Valderrama. I saw that Lee Westwood interview in Germany saying, well, in my day, we used to play sort of 10, 12, whatever it was, 16 straight weeks. But it's a little bit unusual off the back of a major maybe to play twice on the spin.
Yeah, a little bit surprising. But, you know, from Matt's point of view, I don't know, maybe he just feels like he's onto a good thing at the moment and just, as Tiger would say, get as many reps in as he possibly can. You know, a week off might disrupt the momentum that he's got, that he's been slowly building. He hasn't won yet this season. That's what we've got to remember. And if he takes that week off, does he lose everything that he's been gradually building towards? That might do more harm than good to have the week off. So I quite like it. I like the fact that he said, you know what, I'm going to keep on playing. And could he win Valderrama this week? Yeah, definitely. Why not?
They are the big three, so to speak, in the field. But it goes down with some very good European Tour players. John, just pick us out one or two other others that potentially could figure on the leaderboard over the course of the week.
Well, yeah, and of course, Pavan's there. Kurt Kitayama, who's won twice this year. I mean, Paul Dunne's had a quiet season. A little bit further down, David Lipsky seems to play well week in, week out. Bjorn's actually playing with Robert Carlsen and Ola Tharbel in the Legends category. So there's plenty of class everywhere you look. Detry's going to be there. Andy Sullivan, they had a good start to the season but seems to have dropped off.
Let's get some predictions then. You've rattled off a number of players there. We've talked about the main three. Michael, let's get a couple from your good self first and foremost. Remember, one, at least one of your selections has got to be from outside of the top 50 from last year's Race to Dubai standing. So give us your two players to follow.
Look, it's unoriginal, but I'm going to go with Sergio simply because I feel like something's got to turn around for him. And if it's going to happen anywhere, it's going to be Valderrama. He's hosting. I think he enjoys that part of it. I fancy he'll make it three in a row. My outside bet, this one might come a little bit from left field, but I'm going to go for Adrie Arnaus. I hope I'm pronouncing that properly, but he's had a steady kind of year. Second at the Kenya Open, tied ninth at the Alfred Dunhill Championship. And you just feel like a Spaniard or a few Spaniards are going to turn up and produce the goods. So those are my two guys, both Spaniards, Sergio to win and Arnaus to contend.
John, who do you like this week?
I'm going for Fitzpatrick, and I've forgotten my other one. Oh, Andrew Johnston.
Why?
Well, I think he started to play a bit better, Johnston, and obviously Fitzpatrick is playing well. And it's not a massively long course. He putts great. So those are my two tips. Who are you going for?
I'm going to go for... Well, you've got to remember that the presenter leads these particular tournaments. I'm going for Adrian Otegi.
Right.
Who hasn't played in the last few weeks, so he's had a bit of time off, which I'm taking as a plus. He was in decent form prior to that. Was 16th in the maiden Denmark, 26th in the Belgian knockout. He's got decent form around Valderrama as well. 12th in the 2017 renewal of this particular event. His driving accuracy stats stand up pretty well. And my second selection is Paul Waring, who we haven't seen since he was tied 18th in the maiden Denmark. He was 6th in the British Masters, going further back in the year, John. He was 3rd in the Dubai Desert Classic and 6th in the Abu Dhabi Championship. So he's had a very good year and he's made the cut last couple of times at Valderrama. Those are my two selections.
Well, brilliant.
You know, those are the two to follow, John.
I've
put some thought into mine.
Yeah.
Michael has as well.
Yeah.
Yours just off the back of a fag packet earlier on today.
And
is
mine's
that true?
Going off knowledge,
really?
Which you haven't got.
Experience.
Yeah.
I see. That is it for now. We will have a full review of the Estrella Damm NA Andalucía Masters hosted by the Sergio Garcia Foundation. I've said it three times now on this show. I think I've got it right every time. John, would you concur?
Debatable.
All right. And we'll also look ahead to the next event on the European Tour, which is the Dubai Duty Free Irish Open. Until then, you can stay up to date with the latest news from the European Tour via the website, as well as Twitter, Facebook, Snapchat, which I know John is on, and indeed Instagram. But for now, Michael, thanks for your company. Enjoyed your contribution to the show. Hopefully you'll come on again soon.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you very much, guys. It's been a pleasure. And yeah, hopefully speak again soon.
See you soon.
And Mr. John Hawksworth, are you giving me a lift back to Chiswick after the show?
There's more chance.
Come on.
Of.
In your BMW 2.9 injection.
You don't drive. Who doesn't drive at 73 years of age?
I have got a licence. But I choose not to. I'm a public transport man.
I'm not going that way.
Are you not going that way today? From Mr. John Hawksworth, it is goodbye.
Goodbye.
And from me, Dan Roebuck, likewise. Goodbye. We'll speak again soon.